Father, as we take a look at your word this morning, we ask you to speak to us, to penetrate deeply into our hearts what you want to say to us today. Father, I pray that what is from you would settle on the hearts, and what is just of mine would be forgotten quickly. We have lived in Lucky Lake for 28 and a half years. No, 28 years, 2 months. Yes. Anyways, doesn't matter. When we first moved here to pastor, Ralph Gleege was the conference minister, and I'm not sure who you'd know else, but there was 7 or 8 of us that Ralph packed into a van to take down to Fresno to the seminary to do the pastor's credentialing. It was quite the trip. You get 7 pastors in the Mormon temple at Salt Lake City, you get some discussions going on. You get 7 pastors in a Vegas casino at about 9 in the morning, you get some discussions going on. That was the slow part of the day. One of the stops that we made was, and I didn't even look up the name of the forest, but with the sequoias in California. And so I believe the tree that we stopped, that we got out, was called the General Sherman. And it is literally the biggest tree in the world. Not the tallest, but the biggest. It is, and you get out and you go, oh, and you look up and it's just this massive, massive tree. And you get this sense of, oh, this is amazing. There was wet snow on the ground, so we picked up snowballs and we started throwing. And I literally, with a snowball, missed the biggest tree in the world. 30 feet in diameter, 270-some feet high, 275 feet tall. That was fun. That was a good trip, though. About 10 years ago, and Wendy could correct my math on this, we went down to Mexico and we traveled down there with Neil and Rhonda. 2 bandfuls of people, their kids and 2 of our kids, traveled down together. And one of the places we stopped was Hoover Dam. And it was Hoover, right? And we walked out there. You could walk out, place you could park and walk out. And you look down and it's just this massive, awe-inspiring gorge and all these warning signs of, you know, don't throw anything off of the dam. Someone, and we won't name names, it wasn't me this time, had to throw a paper airplane just to see, and you watch it, and you watch it, and you watch it, and you watch it. There is stuff, and I told Jeremy the other day, I said, your wife is making me irritated. He goes, why? I'm not sure what you're thinking right now, but I said, your wife is making me irritated. He goes, why? I said, she keeps posting these beautiful pictures of the Northern Lights, and I keep missing them. Been waiting to see. So the other night we saw some Northern Lights finally. Friday night? I think it was Friday night. And I think we went to bed before they got really nice, because my nephew posted some really nice pictures of kind of filling the sky. They're just amazing. What brings you awe? What are the things that you go, oh, this is... I would look up the tree and I'd get queasy, right? I don't do the heights thing really well. I would look down over the dam like, oh, okay. Stomach's got to settle, right? Wasn't moving at all. You just look up at something. What brings you awe? What makes you go, oh, I am amazed by that? I'm going to speak on something that terrifies me a little, and yet I was sitting there just anxious to get up here. And part of the reason I'm anxious is because I'm going to reread one of the verses that Ken read in a few minutes, and I'm going to reread one of the verses that Dan read in a few minutes. Psalm 103 is our theme psalm for the year, along with Jeremiah 17, 7, and 8. And as I've been going through it, I've been working at memorizing it out of the NIV. I'm going to read it out of the NIV, because otherwise I can hardly read if I'm reading in a different version. And what it really struck me the last while, as I knew I was going to be speaking, was 3 verses in particular. Verse 11 says, "For as high as the heavens are above the earth, so great is his love for those who fear him." 13, "As a father has compassion on his children, so the Lord has compassion on those who fear him." And verse 17, "But from everlasting to everlasting, the Lord's love is with those who fear him. His righteousness with their children's children, those who keep his covenant and remember to obey his precepts." Oh, I was going to read this out of here too. So to Genesis 22, Ken just read verse 12. "Do not lay a hand on the boy," he said. "Do not do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God, because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son." And Dan, in Psalm 33, I often don't notice this. If you think that I notice this kind of thing all the time, I don't. I don't mean to give you the impression that I do. Psalm 33. Verse 18. "The eyes of the Lord are on those who fear him, on those whose hope is in his unfailing love." And as I was sitting there thinking about all this, my thought was, and I don't say this lightly, but I feel like maybe today I should, "He who has ears to hear what the Spirit would say to us today." This seems significant. This seems important. So fear of the Lord. This always brought me just a little confusion. Because on one hand, you read some of the passages and you go, okay, that doesn't sound like awe and reverence. Then you read the New Testament, and we're going to be in the Old today. I think this is probably part one of two. We're going to be in the Old Testament today. And you read in John where it says, "Perfect love casts out fear." Because fear is not, has nothing to do with love. But then we also read, "Do not fear man, but fear the one who has the power to throw your soul into hell." So what do we do with this? What really helped me, I got looking at the words. 2 Chronicles 17:10. There's two different words in the Old Testament that are translated fear. 17:10 says, "Now the dread of the Lord," or the fear of the Lord, "was on all the kingdoms of the lands which were around Judah, so that they did not make war against Jehoshaphat." And in that context, and the word there is, and don't take my Hebrew pronunciations, but it's pahad, pahrad, something like that. And it literally means terror. So what it's saying here is the terror of the Lord was on all the kingdoms of the lands. You go, is that what this means? And then verse 7 in chapter 19 of 2 Chronicles. Did I say 2 Corinthians? Okay, good. It says, "Now let the fear of the Lord be upon you. Be very careful what you do, for the Lord our God will have no part in unrighteousness or partiality or the taking of a bribe." And again, that Hebrew word literally means terror. So our concept of fear of some people are literally terrified of snakes. I don't know what your fears are, but we won't go too deep into snake stories or spider stories or anything. But that's the word is terror here. However, when we come to Psalm 103, and I checked quick in my Bible app, and in Genesis 22 and in Psalm 33, it's a different term, and it's yirah. And again, my pronunciation is not right, but, and yirah has two meanings depending on, it's called the stem that they use in Hebrew. One of them is fear, terror, dread, but one of them that's used in these situations is awe reverence, respect. And that distinction for me, as I was studying some of this, cleared a lot of stuff up. Because the same phrasing is used in our translation sometimes where it says, the fear of the Lord and the fear of the Lord, and they're different Hebrew words. As far as I could find, we were never instructed to fear the Lord with regards to being in terror of him, but to be in awe of him. I want to jump ahead. Anyways, I won't. So we're going to turn to 2 Kings 17. And as I was studying these terms, this is where I came to, was this passage. 2 Kings 17, starting at verse 6. And I debated jumping around and stuff. We're just going to read through it. And I'm going to read it in the NASB, so if it's a little different. Yirah is sometimes translated actually as worship. And I wanted to use a translation that translated as fear because it's a little bit more appropriate. In the ninth year of Hoshea, the king of Assyria captured Samaria and carried Israel away into exile to Assyria and settled them in Halah and Habar on the river of Gozan and in the cities of the Medes. So this is the fall of the northern kingdom of Israel. It's getting described here. Now this came about because the sons of Israel had sinned against the Lord their God, who had brought them up from the land of Egypt, from under the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and they had feared other gods. It's an interesting phrase. They had feared other gods. They had been in awe. They had revered other gods above God, above Yahweh, and walked in the customs of the nations whom the Lord had driven out before the sons of Israel, and in the customs of the kings of Israel which they had introduced. And the sons of Israel did things secretly which were not right against the Lord their God. Moreover, they built for themselves high places in all their towns, from watchtower to fortified city, and they set for themselves sacred pillars and asherim on every high hill and under every green tree. And there they burned incense on all the high places, as the nations did, which the Lord had carried away to exile before them, and they did evil things, provoking the Lord. So what they did is they set up their places of worship on every high hill, under every green tree, and they did the stuff that God had delivered them from, essentially. Got rid of the other nations that were doing this, worshiping all these other gods, and Israelites did exactly the same thing. They did evil things, provoking the Lord, and they served idols. It's two things. Concerning which the Lord had said to them, you shall not do this thing. Yet the Lord warned Israel and Judah through all his prophets and every seer, saying, turn from your evil ways. Keep my commandments, my statutes according to all the law, which I commanded your fathers and which I sent to you through my servants, the prophets. However, they did not listen, but stiffened their neck like their fathers, who did not believe in the Lord their God. And they rejected his statutes and his covenant. You're keeping track of all the stuff that they did that God didn't approve of here? Rejected his statutes and his covenant, which he made with their fathers, and his warnings with which he warned them. And they followed vanity and became vain, and went after the nations which surrounded them, concerning which the Lord had commanded them not to do like them. And they forsook all the commandments of the Lord their God, made for themselves molten images, even two calves, made an Asherah, and worshipped all the host of heaven, and served Baal. Then they made their sons and daughters pass through the fire and practice divination and enchantments, and sold themselves to do evil in the sight of the Lord, provoking him. So the Lord was very angry with Israel, and removed them from his sight, None was left except the tribe of Judah. And Judah did not keep the commandments of the Lord their God, but walked in the customs which Israel had introduced. And the Lord rejected all the descendants of Israel and afflicted them and gave them into the hand of plunderers until he had cast them out of his sight. When he had torn Israel from the house of David, they made Jeroboam the son of Nebat king. Then Jeroboam drove Israel away from following the Lord and made them commit a great sin. And the sons of Israel walked in all the sins of Jeroboam, which he did. They did not depart from them until the Lord removed Israel from his sight, as he spoke through all his servants, the prophets. So Israel was carried away into exile from their own land to Assyria until this day. They had lost the awe of who God was. When Moses led the people across the Red Sea, and I won't go to that verse, but it says they feared the Lord. They were in awe of what he did for them. And they had lost this. They had chosen to revere and awe other gods. And the king of Assyria brought men from Babylon and from Cutha and from Ava and from Hamath and Sepharvaim, and settled them in the cities of Samaria in place of the sons of Israel. So they possessed Samaria and lived in its cities. It came about at the beginning of their living there that they did not fear the Lord. Therefore the Lord sent lions among them, which killed some of them. So they spoke to the king of Assyria, saying, "The nations whom you have carried away into exile in the cities of Samaria do not know the custom of the God of the land. So he has sent lions among them, and behold, they kill them because they do not know the custom of the God of the land." And it's fascinating that the king of Assyria had this thought that the people in this faraway land that he had conquered should know the custom of the God of the land they conquered. The king of Assyria commanded, saying, "Take there one of the priests whom you carried away into exile, and let him go and live there, and let him teach them the custom of the God of the land." So one of the priests whom they had carried away into exile from Samaria came and lived at Bethel and taught them how they should fear the Lord, how they should awe and reverence him. How do you think it went? Let's keep going. But every nation still made gods of its own and put them in the houses of the high places which the people of Samaria had made, every nation in their cities in which they lived. And the men of Babylon made Sukkoth-Benoth, the men of Cuth made Nergal, the men of Hamath made Ashima, and the Avites made Nibhaz and Tartak, and this, I didn't practice all the names, and the Sepharvites burned their children in the fire to Adrammelech and Anemelech, the gods of Sepharvaim. They also feared the Lord. That's weird. They also feared the Lord and appointed from themselves, among themselves, priests of the high place who acted for them in the houses of the high places. They feared the Lord, but they didn't let go of fearing other gods. They feared the Lord, verse 33, and served their own gods according to the custom of the nations from among whom they had been carried away into exile. To this day, they do according to the earlier customs. They do not fear the Lord, nor do they follow their statutes or their ordinances or the law or the commandments which the Lord commanded the sons of Jacob, whom he named Israel, with whom the Lord had made a covenant and commanded them, saying, "You shall not fear other gods, nor bow down yourselves to them, nor serve them, nor sacrifice to them." It is a thing in our world and in our lives, unless you are way better than me, way more mature, and some of you probably are, but it is a thing that we want to do, where we want to bow down to the to God, and we want to fear Yahweh, and we want to bow to Him. We want to hold Him in awe and reverence here. But then here, we want to awe and reverence some of the other stuff in our lives. North American church in general, the church throughout history, has always had this tendency of, we will follow you, Lord, anywhere. You are amazing. You are awesome. And here we go. Now I'm going to jump ahead. Has anybody seen the movie Up? Remember Doug? So in the movie Up, it's an animated movie, and there's Doug the dog. Doug the dog has a special collar on so he can talk so that people can hear him. So he meets the main character in the movie. Forgive me if I didn't watch the whole thing lately. So he meets the main character in the movie, and he jumps up and, hello, master, I love you. You are so wonderful. And how are you talking? Well, my other master made me this collar. And he goes, squirrel. And I feel like that's sometimes us. Master, you are so amazing. You are so wonderful. Squirrel. And we're gone. And then we come back, and he's gracious. He's incredibly gracious. Let's go to verse 36. But the Lord, who brought you up from the land of Egypt with great power and with an outstretched arm, Him you shall fear, Him you shall awe and reverence, and to Him you shall bow yourselves down, and to Him you shall sacrifice. And the statutes and the ordinances and the law and the commandments which He wrote for you, you shall observe to do forever, and you shall not fear other gods. And the covenant that I've made with you, you shall not forget, nor shall you fear other gods. But the Lord your God you shall fear, and He will deliver you from the hand of all your enemies. However, they did not listen, but they did according to their earlier custom. So while these nations feared the Lord, they also served their idols, their children likewise, their grandchildren, as their fathers did, so they do to this day. And that's the Samaritans. That's the history of the Samaritans. And they were hated by both the Jews and by the Gentiles. They had, so to speak, one foot in each world, and they couldn't decide to follow the Lord, and they wouldn't leave Him completely. Are our hearts divided? It's an unfavorite question. That's a bad way to put it. It's not a favorite question. God is incredibly gracious, incredibly loving. If we go back to Psalm 103, and I need to say about those verses that I read, I don't understand it entirely. But there's a sense, because we know God loves everyone. Jesus died for everyone. His love is there for everybody. All-encompassing, freely given, no question. But when you read these verses, you get the sense that somehow it is made active in our lives in a different way. As high as the heavens are above the earth, so great is His love for those who fear Him. As a father has compassion on his children, so the Lord has compassion on those who fear Him. From everlasting to everlasting, the Lord's love is with those who fear Him. There is something distinct about those who hold God in the proper awe and reverence which He possesses that impacts our lives. And that's not to say I'm not saying health and wealth. I'm not saying everything is rosy. But that maybe we can't fully know or comprehend or understand His love if we don't fully comprehend who He really is. Sorry, I'm doing a lot of this today. You got to kind of pretend he's right there, I guess. I don't know how that... What is it about standing in awe of God that changes things? You know, you think about, you know, whatever the situation is. 30 years ago, I was in front of that tree, and somehow it left an impression on me. And it's only a tree. Bear tooth pass. Got to the top of the pass, and we just said, we have to get out and walk around. It's a huge, expansive valley in the mountains, and it's green, and it's beautiful. And you go, but what is it about standing in the presence of God or coming into the presence of God and knowing him in his awesomeness that changes us, transforms us? As usual, this message is probably more for me than any of you. I've often considered what it means to walk humbly, what it means to worship, what it means to serve. How do we undivide our hearts? Because that's not our desire. I mean, it's our earthly man's desire, but not our redeemed man's desire. How do we undivide our hearts? I'm going to suggest, and there's more to this, I'm sure. I'm going to suggest get out of the car. We would have driven right past the tree. We would have driven right over the dam. We'd have never seen anything. In fact, it seems to me that when you drove over the dam, all that you could see was these barricades about this high. We got to get out of the car. We have to be able to see what's awesome. And you think of Hebrews where it says, fix your eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. Know the Father. Get to know his love. Spend the time with him. Listen to the counsel of the Holy Spirit. We miss that one sometimes. I said to somebody, you know, the Holy Spirit is called a counselor. That means someone that gives us wisdom. How would you finish this sentence? I am in awe in your own life. I'm in awe of his. I've spent a year and a half learning to be in awe of his love. It is pretty important. It is precious. And I hate to say it, you very rarely become in awe of his love without hardship. What else? I'm in awe of his. His grace. His mercy. His goodness. His holiness. His majesty. Consistency, the one who is always there. There's a part of me when I started looking at this and thinking about it was his holiness and his majesty was what his awe was all about. And it is. But he's so much more than that alone. And so I appreciate this, his love, his goodness, his mercy, his grace, his holiness, his majesty. I have also lately become a little bit in awe of his wisdom. When he gives it, how he leads. Number one is get out of the car. Number two, I didn't have it written down, but it feels to me like right now it's share the journey. Share what's going on in our lives. Why? How has he been good? How has he been loving? As we share the journey, I think we stand in awe of what other people have gotten to know him as. No, we stand in awe of him because of how other people have seen him and have been in awe of him. Number three, I would say, walk humbly. There's a verse in here. Where was it? It followed vanity and became vain. So we humble ourselves and say, Lord, teach us. Lord, let us see you. Lord, number four, seek him. Those who seek the Lord. Wow. Someone help me with the verse. Seek the Lord, he will not fail to be found. Yeah. Seek him with your whole heart. You'll find him when you seek him with your whole heart, right? And now I have more to say. In a lot of these verses, and as you look at this, there's two or three things that come up. One is fearing him, standing in awe of him. Another one is serving him. Who do we serve? And another one is worship. And worship is, I believe the Hebrew word for it is shaka, which is to bow down before. And bowing down before means this is who I serve, this is who I give myself to, this is who I follow. And so, yeah, you shall have no other gods. You shall not fear other gods. You shall not worship other gods. Do not awe and reverence them. Do not bow down to them. Do not give them authority in your life, is what it means. Give Yahweh, the King of Heaven, authority in your life to follow him, to bow to him, to have him be the one that we make our decisions based on, our actions, how we live, what we choose. Is to the God of heaven. It's who we worship.